So what if instead of feeling mysterious, kind of weird, sometimes dramatic, begonias actually are just a little misunderstood? They're such a beautiful family of plants, and they come in so many gorgeous varieties. And sometimes they can be really disappointing for people, but they can actually be very easy to care for. And that's why I am bringing a very old episode of Growing Joy back from the archives in this Best of Growing Joy series, where we are joined by Mark Hachadorian, otherwise known as Orchid Mark, and he is the head honcho at New York Botanical Garden. Mark joined me to break down why begonias look the way they do, where they come from, and how we can keep them thriving indoors. From angel wings to Rex begonias, this conversation is going to help you trade begonia fear for confidence and curiosity. And it's really making me want to go out and buy another angel wing polka dot begonia right this very minute. Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Mark? Hey, it's great to be here. How have you been?
I'm so good. And I'm so thankful that you're back after the celebrated Maranta episode that we did almost a year ago, I guess.
Who knew I would become the Calathea queen?
You know? You are the Calathea queen. People still write me about your hospital trick with the humidity plastic bag. Maybe we'll talk about it with begonias as well. But people
Actually, it applies to them too.
So. Yeah. So for those who might have not listened to the Maranta episode, which you absolutely should go back if you have any interest in the prayer plant family, who are you and how did you become the botanical bro that you are today? And what do you do for the Botanical Garden?
Well, I am the director of Glasshouse Horticulture for the New York Botanical Garden. Essentially, I'm just a professional plant geek. I've been interested in horticulture as long as I can remember. Most people know me as an orchid expert, but as many of my friends will tell you, no plant is safe. Mm-hmm. So whatever it is, I love to grow it, whether it's Marantaceae, orchids, begonias, aroids. As far as I'm concerned, plants are it and they're the center of my universe. So I'm happy to be here and chat with you and share my knowledge and expertise with everyone out there.
And in case you hear little chirpy chirps in the background, Mark and I are doing this interview in the midst of the New York City quarantine. And so Mark's at home and he's got quite the aviary at his home in New Jersey.
In addition to the plants at home, I've got a few birds. So if you hear some chirping in the background, that's the parakeets in the living room.
It's quite relaxing, honestly. It makes you feel like you're in like a tropical jungle kind of.
Yeah, I need some jungle noises.
Yeah, we need some relaxing jungle music for me to stop listening to the city outside my window. So definitely go listen to the Maranta episode. I'm so excited to talk to you about begonias today because I feel like begonias are one of the like main Instagram trendy plants, especially. I have always been obsessed with the angel wing begonia and how that looks. But Mark, like, I don't get it. They have these huge leaves and these tiny little stems that hold these leaves up. And I just don't understand how these plants work. And I hear that they're very finicky. People like, I feel like, have a lot of opinions on how finicky begonias are and they're so pretty. So why don't you share a little bit about what these like weird alien plants are and why they're so varied?
Well, you are absolutely right in that begonias are having a surge in popularity right now. Not only are they totally Instagrammable, but they're a wonderful group of plants for an incredible diversity of both foliage and flower form. Begonias are actually one a huge flowering plant family with over 1,800 different species. Whoa. So there's essentially a begonia for every type of environment imaginable. There are begonias that grow in near desert-like conditions. There are some that require perfect terrarium conditions. And if you do one thing wrong, they crisp up in an instant. Mm-hmm. But the diversity of begonias includes plants that are absolute miniatures, tiny little things, to plants that will get 6, 7, 8 feet tall or even taller. So a lot of the myth and mystery surrounding begonias is very similar to something, say, like orchids, where you have this huge diversity of plants, and it's really difficult to generalize in saying that all begonias require these set of conditions. What you then need to learn and understand is what type of begonia you have. And starting out, many people will be growing Rex begonias with their beautiful metallic patterns, colors, and foliage. Angel wing begonias, of which Begonia maculata is kind of one of the more coveted plants these days, with those polka dot silver polka dots on their foliage. You have rhizomatous begonias, which are these long, thickened roots with beautiful swirled or patterned leaves. You even have tuberous begonias, which will go completely dormant during part of the year and then resprout full of flowers and foliage at a particular time of the year, mostly in the summer. So depending on begonias, a lot of conflicting information is out there because it requires a lot of basic knowledge to understand which type of begonia you have, and then the specific care for that kind of begonia is where it becomes a little confusing.
So when it comes to all of those different types of begonias you just listed, how do they get broken down? So is it, you know, you mentioned tuberous and rhizomatic, those are things that happen in the root. So is it based on their root system?
Essentially based on the plant form. We'll see, if you actually quick look at the begonia diversity, you'll see begonias are divided into different classifications. There are cane begonias, rub-like begonias, begonias, angel wing begonias. You'll see that Bax begonias are a common summer annual. And you see the Begonia sempervirens hybrids all over the place in summer. So when looking at begonias, it's a matter of understanding which classification your plant belongs to. Mm-hmm. And then from there, that's where you can generalize. You will learn that angel wing begonias are propagate in a particular way, enjoy a certain set of conditions. Or in the case of tuberous and rhizomatous begonias, they will have a seasonal dormancy in which they want drier conditions. They may drop their leaves. And so you just have to understand what type of begonia you have. And then from there, make the right choices in terms of its cultural needs.
So I would imagine that of those different classifications for indoor cultivating, caring for, what would be, I would imagine ones that go dormant probably isn't a great idea. So what types would you suggest for people who want to be houseplant parents and have them indoors?
Well, begonias are actually very durable, and they've been cultivated for many, many years, and they make great houseplants. They were popular in Victorian times and even into the early 19th and early 20th century. Certain plants like the Iron Cross begonia were common heirloom houseplants, just like Sansevierias or Aspidistras. And if you don't believe me, look in the background of the painting American Gothic. There are two plants on the porch. One of them is a Sansevieria and the other is the Iron Cross begonia.
Oh, no way.
So even if they appear in all sorts of fun places. Begonias were very popular because they were easy to grow. They adapted to our home conditions. And they're also easy to propagate, which is one of the reasons why they're great, is that you can propagate them in many, many different ways, which makes them a great pass-along plant for people to share with friends or, you know, multiply them in their home. The begonias themselves generally will like moderate humidity. There are some that require high humidity, and the terrarium begonias are a whole separate group. But in general, moderate humidity, medium to low light conditions. Most begonias don't like blazing hot sunlight, and they will burn very easily. And they actually like to dry out slightly between waterings. Like many plants, one of the most common ways to fail with begonias in the home is by overwatering. Most begonias have very delicate and very fine fibrous root systems that actually rot very easily if given too much water. So it's best to allow them to go on the dry side between waterings. And that's one of the big, big things that I always stress about begonia culture is just making sure you don't overwater them. Because most of the common diseases they have are also usually related to overwatering.
Okay. So when thinking about how to care for them indoors, I like to think about where they live outdoors first. So when thinking about caring for them indoors, I like to think about where they come from outdoors. So in real life, in nature, because there's so many different types, do they come from all over the world, or is there a certain type of climate that they tend to be found in?
There are begonias from all over the world. There are begonias that are even winter hardy in New York City, and that they will survive our cold winters. Most begonias come from relatively close to the equator. They're found in somewhat moist habitats with good humidity, very typical conditions. You find them growing alongside orchids and bromeliads and aroids in
most house plants. Most tropical plants. foliage plants.
Very similar conditions. As you get into their native habitats, there are some that are from these very extreme or very delicate environments in which they are surrounded by very low light and perfect high humidity. Mm-hmm. But those are kind of the exception, although some of them are really spectacular.
Yeah, I feel like the big overarching thing with begonias is their unbelievable leaves, which is kind of funny because that's the big overarching thing with the Marantaceae family as well. Why are their leaves so incredible? Like, why do they have such amazing patterns in their leaves? And is that like something that they've adapted to?
Absolutely. If you look at foliage diversity, a lot of plants that are from low light environments have very patterned and sometimes reflective patterns on their foliages. What that is sometimes referred to as what people call cryptic coloration. And that what it does is it makes the leaves look somewhat unpalatable to an herbivore or kind of camouflages them in reality, because those wild patterns and spots and colors to the eye of an herbivore don't look like a leaf. They kind of confuse animals into thinking maybe they're not as tasty. And sometimes those reflective patterns have some adaptations to low light conditions as well.
Okay. Is that what one of our listeners, Terracotta Warrior on Instagram, asked about iridioclasts and low light adaptations?
Oh my goodness. You guys get the really A-list questions.
Yeah. We're a community of nerds.
Big time. So that type of reflectance in their foliage is a way to help plants grow in diffuse light situations.
Okay.
And low light situations. Granted, I'm sure I'd have to Google to get the correct answer there, but it's something that many begonias, the lower the light you grow them in, the better the reflectance on that foliage becomes. So these reflective cells...
They look kind of like iridescent, right?
Yes.
The ones we're
one of the
about.
Most okay. famous ones that's been a real collector these days is Begonia pavonina.
Right.
Peacock begonia that when exposed to kind of a flash of light has this iridescence like the blue of a peacock's feather. What this is a way for plants to survive and photosynthesize in extremely low light environments.
Okay.
To be honest, I'm not exactly an expert on iridioplasts, but what this is these are all adaptations to be growing in low light environments.
Okay, so they're coming from low light environments in general.
Yes. Some species, not all. But there are some begonias that'll grow in very bright light, almost cacti-like conditions.
Wow. But those low-light ones make sense that they would do well indoors when our light, no matter how bright our southern-facing windows are, is going to be lower than outdoors.
Exactly. Many of the low-light begonias also have very thin leaves, and most of those low-light varieties need constant high humidity. Many of those are grown in terrariums to keep that humidity and moisture. But ironically, many of those begonias also don't like to stay super saturated at the roots. They actually prefer even moderate moisture, not really wet environments to grow. They just love that high humidity around their foliage, but not super saturated around their roots, which is kind of ironic. But when you see the way these plants grow in the wild, you'll see many begonias growing on a very, very thin layer of moss on the surface of rocks. So they're not necessarily very deep rooted. So the roots will dry out and be exposed to a little bit of air and not really in these really wet environments.
But they're probably used to getting a lot of rainfall and then letting it dry out and then getting more like very consistent rainfall.
What you'll find is they grow in these very sheltered and protected spots, like the underhang of a cliff, in which you have this very stable environment with very low air movement. It was just on a trip in Colombia, and it was shocking to see how dark some begonia species grow. They almost seem like they're growing in the caves more than out in the sunshine.
Wow. Okay. So I guess this conversation is going to be tricky because I feel like the answer for a lot is going to be like, well, for most or for some. But
it does fall into that category.
So maybe we can pick a few, like a Rex begonia. I feel like we see a lot. Definitely Angel Wing. Costa Farms just came out with an Angel Wing begonia in their new trending tropicals line that people are like freaking out about.
I heard there was an incident at a big box store of people fighting over some begonias.
Yeah. So I'm like, got to get my hands on one of those. So let's definitely talk about Angel Wing. Let's definitely talk about cane begonias, I feel like is another one. And maybe any other ones that we feel like are going to show up in houseplant indoors a lot. So soil-wise, what soil are we putting these puppies in?
Well, for almost all begonias, I have found they always do best in a soilless mix. A peat-based soilless mix is very amenable to almost any begonia I've ever grown.
Even what do you mean when you say soilless mix?
Soilless mixes are mixes that are generally peat, perlite, vermiculite, and do not contain any topsoils or any heavy inorganic materials in them.
Okay.
Those fibrous root systems, they love that little bit of organic material from the peat and mm-hmm. the evenness of moisture it provides. And I find they root best and grow in those types of mixes.
Got it.
So you want something that's very light, fluffy, very open for your begonias.
And that's going to drain. So those roots,
exactly.
those thin fibrous roots don't sit in water, which
exactly.
is
that
everybody's right.
That perfect balance of moisture and air.
Okay, so that's the soil. And so with the watering, it sounds like you're giving it a good water and then you're letting the soil dry out to like, I like to measure just with my finger knuckles, like two knuckles in, you let it dry out and then water
yeah.
it again.
Yeah, you want to make sure they're not kept super saturated, but you do want to allow them to approach dryness before watering. Not bone dry. The plants will definitely wilt before then.
Right.
But you want to make sure that they're not kept too wet. So just basically, as you would say, it's kind of two knuckles in. You want to let it dry out towards the surface.
Yeah. I also have like little fingers, but whatever. Okay. So for light, most begonias are coming from low light conditions. So you got to be careful of getting, of burning them. Like I'm all southern facing windows. So I'm not putting a begonia in my southern facing window.
I think calathea light. Think Marantaceae light, think African violet light,
right.
in which bright filtered light would be ideal,
okay.
but not that full sun that you would have for a snake plant or a succulent, for sure.
Okay. What about a northern window would probably be okay?
Many begonias do great in northern windows. Begonias are actually pretty adaptable in that they'll adapt from bright filtered light to really low light conditions. They may mm-hmm. grow a little slower and get a little stretched in a lower light condition, but they will survive. And some people always talk about, you know, African violet light. Very similar. Very
okay.
similar conditions for your begonias.
Got it. And let's talk about humidity, because I'd love for you to talk about your plant hospital again, just because people loved that from the other episode. And I know some begonias that we love like humidity more. So can you talk a little bit about that?
So I think one of the biggest challenges for houseplant fanatics now and in any home is humidity. Our homes are not designed to hold a lot of moisture. It's
no.
not something that people usually want around. But unfortunately, many of our houseplants require it and really thrive and need it to survive. With growing plants in the home and getting that higher than average humidity, there's a couple of different tricks you can do. First thing is plants are social. They like being together. Mm-hmm. Since plants naturally release moisture into the air, if you group your plants together, they will create what's essentially called a microclimate, an area of localized higher humidity by keeping your plants next to each other. So rather than dispersing them one in every corner, if you keep your plants together, you'll get that natural environment that where they will benefit each other. From there, one of the other tricks, the old pebble tray still works very well, in which mm-hmm. you have a tray, you can fill it with small pebbles and keep that filled with water. Not so much that the pot sits in the water itself, but those pebbles will provide an increased surface area for evaporation, allowing water to get into the air in the form of vapor, keeping that humidity higher around your plants. It's a trick that's been done for years and works very well. If you want to go to the other extreme, it's not uncommon for people to get a small ultrasonic humidifier that maybe runs on a timer to help increase the ambient humidity in their homes. In reality, higher than average humidity in our homes isn't just beneficial for our plants, but for us as well. It's good for your skin. It's good for your furniture. It's good for your lungs. So that little bit of higher humidity, and when we're talking about 50% or above, is beneficial, especially if people are in apartments where sometimes they can't control the heat or it's overheated. That added humidity is a real boon to everything in our homes. That little bit of an ultrasonic humidifier is great. If some people don't want to go to that extreme, the next question people always ask about is misting. Well,
yeah.
I missed my plant a couple of times a day. Well, in reality, misting your plant is good. It's beneficial. It's not bad, but it really doesn't do much to build the humidity in your home. It does more to help your wrist strength than it does to get that humidity, because that little spritz eventually evaporates and then dissipates into the room. I don't have a problem with misting your plants. It's a way for people to interact with them. And it's really a time when people pay closer attention. They get that chance to observe plants. But alternatively, we had talked about the plant hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Plants like Marantaceae and begonias, because they like higher than average humidity, they do really well in terrarium environment. And so growing begonias in terrariums, I mean, you might need a big terrarium for a tall angel wing, a simple cloche, a jar sort of overturned, or even if you need to rehab a sick begonia, taking a plastic bag loosely over the top of the plant. You can support the bag by some bamboo sticks or a bent piece of wire, creates a little greenhouse over the top of that plant. And not only will that help you rehab a sick plant, it'll really help plants, like if you've got to have that begonia or calathea, it'll give you that little bit of bonus of humidity in its own little personal greenhouse to help that plant survive and thrive in your home environment.
Those cloches are so beautiful. They make some really beautiful styles now. Mm-hmm. I was looking on Terrain's website the other day and I was like, these are so pretty.
Look, you can find inexpensive ones made out of plastic. You can source antique ones.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, when I started in horticulture so many years ago, these were things that you had to hunt high and low for. There was no mm-hmm. place where you could go. Now the options and styles are, it's almost limitless. I know people who have repurposed tall cylinder vases instead of using them for flower arranging. It gives you a nice little mini greenhouse. And even people who, those kind of candle lanterns that you see all the time at like places like Home Goods, mm-hmm. it's a little glass box.
Yeah, it's so cute.
Some ventilation. So you could even use your creativity and repurpose some other things and turn them into mini greenhouses for your begonias. So the ideas are, and the options are kind of limitless. Mm-hmm. It's just using a little bit of imagination, some basic knowledge and creativity to come up with a beautiful solution to create that little bit of localized humidity for your begonias at home.
Plant friends, if you end up finding a cloche or repurposing something, put it on Instagram and tag me and Mark because we want to see it.
Let me tell you, the amount of crazy terrariums that I've seen mm-hmm. never fails to impress me.
I love that.
This was growing up. These things weren't available. I used to go after big pickle jars and big mayonnaise jars to make terrariums. That mm-hmm. those were my options. Nowadays, the amazing and beautiful containers that are out there, I've seen some really incredible specimen begonias grown in just basic old glass containers that, you know, people found for a dollar at the thrift store.
Yeah, the thrift stores are great. And like estate sales are like great places to look.
Totally.
What about the angel wing begonia? Let's just talk about it for a little bit. This is one of the ones that I'm like, the stem is so thin and the leaves are so big. Like, how do the leaves stand up? I don't understand the physics of it. But is there anything specific care-wise we should know about angel wing?
So angel wing begonias can actually get quite large. We often see them as single rooted cuttings, just a few inches tall. Mm-hmm. And it seems, as you said, disproportionate. You have this tiny little plant with these really, really long leaves.
Yeah.
Like Begonia maculata, I've got specimens at the Botanical Garden that are easily 6 feet tall. They can get enormous over time.
Wow.
And so I've even got one angel wing begonia that I think now is pushing 8 feet tall. It's not uncommon for them to get really large.
And is it 8 feet tall because the leaves have gotten that tall?
The stems get higher and higher and higher.
Wow.
If you feel the stems on an angel wing begonia, they're actually pretty hard. They're mm-hmm. pretty durable. And they're designed to be able to not only get that plant up tall, but mm-hmm. also to support the weight of the foliage, and they will branch over time.
Okay.
Angel wing begonias produce a very large fibrous root system. And with most begonias, they're actually pretty heavy feeders in terms of their growth. Because many begonias are also rapidly growing, producing a lot of foliage, a lot of stems once they get established, it's not uncommon for people to use a slow release fertilizer mm-hmm. to provide them with those constant nutrients that they need. You will find that if a begonia starts sort of losing nutrients and running out of food, it drops a lot of its lower leaves.
Okay.
So you have these long stems with only a few leaves on the end.
Mm-hmm.
And it's best to keep those plants well fed to make sure they can keep all of the foliage on their stems so you don't wind up getting a plant with this sort of very sort of skeletal appearance.
Okay. Because we have a listener question. Welcome to the Jungle Home said that she has a begonia with new leaves that keep yellowing and dropping. So that, could that be a that fertilizing
could,
thing?
That could be a nutrient deficiency, and it could also be a humidity issue. With the new leaves that are yellowing and dropping, I would actually, before I ruled out anything else, I would get yourself your magnifying glass and take a real close look at that new growth. One of the most common pests of begonias in the home is the dreaded red spider mites. And there's also other broad mites that don't make webbing that will plague begonias. So just because you don't see webs doesn't mean the mites aren't there. And many times they will concentrate on that tender, delicious new growth and attack the plants there. Some of these mites are so tiny, you really, truly can't see them with the naked eye, and you need a magnifying glass. And so get a close-up look at that new growth to make sure the mites aren't present. And that could be the cause of the yellowing on that new growth more than a food issue.
Could it be overwatering as well?
Yes, it could be. Because one of the things is with overwatering is if you damage the root system of the plant, not only have you damaged its ability to take up moisture, but you've also damaged its ability to take up nutrients. And with a reduced root system, essentially the plant is kind of starving because it has no way to get food into it. So, you know, it might be tip the plant out of its pot, make sure the roots are healthy and white. Begonia whites should be very fibrous and white, such a light tan colored. And then check for pests on that new growth. And that would be my recommendations for that plant that's yellowing at the newest growth.
The Rex begonia is the one that's like darker and kind of swirly, right?
Yes.
We see those a lot in plant shops.
Absolutely. Because they are irresistible with those metallic, many times blue and purple and
purple, pink,
all sorts of electric colors on the foliage. People get them home and they get terrified because suddenly the plant starts dropping leaves.
Okay.
Rex begonias will actually go through a seasonal, it's not a true dormancy in which they go completely to sleep, but they will slow down, especially in the cooler times of the year in which they'll drop a lot of their leaves. You'll find that they look kind of sad with just a few leaves hanging on. But once the warm temperatures and humidity returns in our springs to summer, they'll start to grow again and put out tremendous amounts of foliage. With Rex begonias, if they get a chill for any length of time, many times triggers that dormancy. So especially if they're put near drafty windows or in areas where it gets really cool at night, they will drop a lot of foliage. Rex begonias enjoy warm, humid temperatures to really perform well.
If you had a grow light in your apartment, could you put them under a grow light that is like a normal amount of light that isn't affected by the seasons? And will that affect its inability to go dormant?
No, actually, grow lights are phenomenal for begonias. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have a single window in your home, and you could grow the most gorgeous begonias under artificial light.
Okay.
Because artificial light is not as intense as natural sunlight. It's the perfect type of light for begonias because they're never going to get burned in sun.
Okay.
And what's great about the artificial light is you have the ability by setting it on a timer to make sure that plant gets the light duration that it needs to keep it from going dormant. Many plants, including begonias, can be somewhat light sensitive. And in our winters in the Northeast United States, when our day length is much shorter, it actually triggers a lot of plants to go dormant. So the addition of a grow light will keep that plant growing year round and prevent it from going to sleep. Because with the long days, plants still think it's summer. It's great for them, actually.
It's tricky. We trick them. All right, that's a wrap on our episode with Mark. Quick note, if the ending of this conversation felt a little abrupt, it's because it was. We ran into an unexpected audio issue when we were pulling this audio from the archives and sadly lost the end of this conversation. So there is that kind of abrupt cutoff, but I want to make sure that you know where to go find Mark. You can find him at his personal Instagram at OrchidMark, and he is also the director of glass horticulture at the New York Botanical Garden. He is always doing amazing things at NYBG. So you can also find him there. He's also a repeat guest on Growing Joy. So if you listen to the podcast, you've probably heard him before. I hope this episode inspired you about begonias and has you wanting to go out and get another one for yourself as quickly as I am. I'm actually headed to the garden center later today and will be scanning to see if I could find a polka dot begonia for myself. I hope this episode was helpful and, of course, that you continue to keep growing joy.
Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy. Plant care.